one of the canonical quantum gravity. It consists of several steps. The first one is constructing the kinematical Hilbert space. The second one is constructing the quantum constraint operators. And now the difficult step comes, which is construction of physical Hilbert space, which consists of physical solutions. So the questions arise, what is definition of a physical solution, whether a physical solution depends on the Laplace and shift functions, how to construct the Hilbert space from those physical solutions. There is a systematic approach to address those questions, which is called group averaging. I'm not sure if Hawking didn't propose a solution to the quantum constraints which looks like given by group averaging. But certainly there are classic works by Marol, Floco, and Giulini. There is another method which I call spectral method, which actually follows from the group averaging, and this method is developed by Timan, and there was also interesting work by Barr. And the last step is construction of the Dirac observables. The only technically working way which we know of constructing Dirac observables is using so-called partial observables, which in fact are derived by some specific way from kinematical observables. Rovelli was the one who brought up this construction in the context of loop quantum gravity, and later he was joined by Dietrich and Timan. However, whereas we know all those steps very well, we still don't control all the technical details in the full theory. Therefore, it is worth to see how this works in the case of simpler models. And very nice, actually the simplest model we have, and at the same time quite relevant for general relativity, is the loop quantum cosmology Friedman-Robertson-Walker model, which was introduced in classic work by Bojowald and then improved by Ashtekar, Pawłowski, Singh, and there are also other younger people working on this model. Therefore, I will focus on those steps in the construction of canonical quantum gravity, in the case of the simpler model. Of course, here everything works very nice, and it's not really big success from the conceptual point of view, because the model is really very simple. But on the other hand, whenever we encounter some surprise, then it is worth noting, because even in the simpler model something is surprising, then maybe we should be aware of this before we solve the full theory. Let us move to the next page. So what is group averaging? Consider a subgroup of, suppose we have some group which is generated by our constraints, and suppose this group is represented in terms of unitary operators acting in some kinematical Hilbert space, then we want to find solutions to the constraints, which is equivalent to saying that we want to find elements of this Hilbert space which are invariant with respect to that group. What we can do is we take element and integrate this element of Hilbert space with respect to the action of all the group. This integral sometimes is well defined in the Hilbert space, sometimes it is well defined only in the distributional sense, sometimes it is only formal. Nonetheless, this is what group averaging proposes as a solution to the constraints which generate this group, which was used for average. On the other hand, another definition of solution to the constraints, especially very clear in the case when we have only one constraint or operator in the kinematical Hilbert space, is to use the spectral decomposition. The spectral decomposition means that we find a way to decompose every vector in a kinematical Hilbert space into a family of vectors labeled by lambda, and lambda also labels a family of Hilbert spaces, and the scalar product in this family of Hilbert spaces is given by the second equality in formula 2. Okay, and so there is isomorphism between our kinematical Hilbert space and this space of families of vectors labeled by lambda, and the constraint operator is mapped by this isomorphism into just multiplication by lambda. Then we call this isomorphism a spectral decomposition of the constraint operator. And now we identify solutions to the constraints C as the Hilbert space corresponding to lambda equal to zero. There is some important technical subtlety that if lambda is a point of measure zero with respect to the measure d mu in formula 2, then in fact it doesn't make much sense to then individual space assigned to lambda is not well defined because we can always replace it by any other space. So it's good to have some notion of continuity. If those subspaces depend on lambda in some sense in a continuous way, then we know what to do. Okay, and there is a passage from the group averaging approach to spectral decomposition approach, which is described in the last formula on this transparency. So we can start with a vector, general vector from the kinematical Hilbert space, written in terms of the spectral decomposition, and then we apply this group averaging with respect to the group generated by the constraint C, and then after some formal calculations we can see that the result is a distribution proportional to delta, Dirac delta in lambda. So indeed it agrees with this guess that the physical solution is element of the Hilbert space in the spectral decomposition corresponding to the zero eigenvalue. Okay, the simplest, let us move to the next transparency, and let us recall how it works in the best known case of spinless, relativistic spinless particle in two dimensions. So in this case, the kinematical setup is as follows. The kinematical Hilbert space is space of functions of two variables. T and X are considered as two independent position variables. T is not, at this point, T is not yet considered as a time. However, it will be time in the next few lines, but it's just a position variable. We have operator corresponding to T and operator corresponding to X. We have conjugate momenta. And I also wrote the Fourier decomposition, which is useful later. And now the constraint is given by the second red bullet. This is T equals PT squared minus PX squared minus M squared. It defines the dynamics. And we have extra positivity condition, which is telling us that for every future oriented vector, we want, at least classically, this quantity was positive. The corresponding projection of momentum was positive. So we want to maintain this condition somehow in the quantum theory. Now, there are many ways of doing this, but let us illustrate this way, which we will be using throughout this talk. So let us do the spectral decomposition. Lambda, so here the constraint is the nabla minus m squared, but it is a convenience to shift the eigenvalue and define lambda to be just omega squared minus k squared instead of omega squared minus k squared m squared. It's equivalent, completely equivalent decomposition. So the decomposition consists in choosing in this Fourier decomposition, instead of one of the variables, choosing lambda, and then the second variable can be, say, k, and then we can see in three that the result is that we have some, in this way we derive the measure depending on k dk upon 2 square root lambda plus k squared, and function, and we have two terms, first term corresponds to positive frequency, second term corresponds to the negative frequencies. Now, if we define solutions of the constraint with lambda equal lambda 0, let us first define for arbitrary lambda 0, we define as distribution supported at lambda 0 proportional to delta lambda minus lambda 0 times some arbitrary function of k. And now we can see that there is continuity in lambda 0, so in particular we can set lambda 0 to be m squared, and in this way we derive the Hilbert space of physical states. The scalar product is given by the last formula of this transparency if we set lambda 0 to be m squared. So this is a very well-known derivation of quantum mechanics of free relativity of particles. And now we will repeat the same strategy, the same approach to the quantum Friedman-Robertson-Walker. Let us move to the next transparency. The classical Friedman-Robertson-Walker consists of a homogeneous isotropic metric tensor coupled to scalar field phi. And now normally I wouldn't bother about pointing out that there are possibilities of choosing different Laplace functions, but since we'll be considering those two choices, let us notice at this point that we can write the constraint, consider the constraint calculated with respect to the Laplace function equal to 1. Then we have the first constraint in formula 5. Equivalently, we can choose the Laplace function to be V, because then we get rid of this denominator at the term corresponding to proportional to P squared. And then the constraint takes suitably different form. Now, capital V is a volume of some physical volume of some fixed compact region, and pi is a momentum conjugate to the field phi integrated along this region. So classically, the two scalar constraints are completely equivalent. However, it's one of our results of our which we present here is that the choice of the Laplace function makes difference in the quantum theory, or at least it can make difference if we follow the procedure which we present here. One more remark is that here I don't write explicitly the gravitational term, is just denoted by C with subscript GR in formula 5. However, this term, the only thing which will be relevant is that this term depends on the cosmological constant. And depending on the value of the cosmological constant, whether it will be negative or positive, either two constraints will be giving equivalent results or inequivalent results. So let us move to the quantum setup, next transparency. So quantum Friedman-Robertson-Walker is defined in the kinematical Hilbert space, which consists of the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom. They are very well known to everybody working on the quantum. They are defined by formula 7 and 8. So the Hilbert space is spanned by eigenvectors of the volume operator. However, they are normalized to Kronecker delta rather than to Dirac delta. There is another elementary operator, which is the shift with respect to the volume. And the shift operator classically corresponds to classical function, which involves the momentum conjugate to volume or to the rate of changes of the scale factor to time. Now, the second degree of freedom is scalar field, is described by Hilbert space of functions of one variable. Scalar field operator acts as multiplication. The conjugate momentum is the derivative defined in formula 10. And the total kinematical Hilbert space is the tensor product of the Hilbert space of the scalar field and times the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom. Now, we rewrite the constraints from the previous transparency by putting hats. So in the last formula, number 11, the last formula on this slide, first we have the random constraint operator corresponding to the choice of laps 1, and the second operator corresponds to the choice of laps function to be V. And here I made a small modification, which is so I wrote okay. So the operator which is usually used in the Ashtekar Pawłowski Singh papers and in other papers on so-called simplified loop quantum cosmology is the constraint operator on the right-hand side, the one which corresponds to Laplace function equal to V. And here I wrote this operator in a little different form than in the original papers, but it is equivalent. And the advantage is that I don't have to change the scalar product in the starting kinematical sequence. Okay, so we have those.
I just have a comment and a question. Jurek, can you go back to the last transparency for a second?
Previous?
Yeah, previous one. So in this transparency, you got these two choices of laps. The laps equal to 1 and the laps equal to the volume of the fiducial cell. If laps is equal to 1, my comment is that if the laps is equal to 1, then the evolution corresponds to just proper time in the classical theory. And if laps is equal to V, roughly speaking, the evolution corresponds, is adapted to the scalar field phi as a time up to constants. So I think changing the laps at the classical level is really saying that already at the classical level, we want to use the scalar field phi as time. If we wanted to do that, then it's more appropriate to choose the constraint with the laps V. Now, if I look at this constraint with the laps just V, then it does not have any factors of inverse volume or anything. On the right-hand side, you just have pi squared plus V times the gravitational constraint. So if you want to quantize this in a direct manner, then you would just distribute V to the 1/2 and V to the 1/2 on the left and the right-hand side of the gravitational constraint. Could we go back to the next transparency? In the bottom formula 11 that Jurek wrote down, if I just had quantized in a direct manner, I would not have these factors V to the minus 1 to the minus 1/2. I would just have factor V to the 1/2 and V to the 1/2 on both sides. I guess Jurek's comment is that he has made this slight change just for some technical simplicity in his presentation. Is that correct, Jurek?
I would like to stick to the original formulae from APS paper. So that's in that paper we distinguish between V2 minus 1 hat and V hat 2 minus 1.
Right, but if I really were to follow your prescription for the last transparency and where to choose the constraint to be C of V, then I would just, there is no V to the V minus 1 anywhere. And therefore, if I were really to quantize that constraint, I would just get pi hat squared tensor product 1 plus 1 tensor product V to the minus 1/2 C hat GR V to the minus 1/2, if I were really starting there.
Okay, so what you are saying is the most natural choice of ordering and of among ambiguities in how we define some quantum operator, you choose some you make some special choice, most natural and simple. I was guided by the choice which was made in APS papers, but they were somehow okay. In other words, I could answer this question in the following way: that it also depends whether we consider V as this Laplace function. If we introduce this Laplace function on classical level and then quantize, or whether we introduce it on quantum level and then we introduce it as an operator. Okay, so there are ambiguities, and my choice of this constraint operator on the right-hand side follows from my understanding of the APS papers. However, this is kind of irrelevant the operator on the right-hand side. So I just tried to put on the same footing the APS paper with what we are doing. If you don't like this, forget about the operator on the right-hand side. Let us take the results which are derived by the series of APS papers as on one hand, and the results which I will discuss derived from the operator on the left-hand side. Okay? And then we still will have this difference. And so the only question is whether it's correct to interpret the results of APS as derived from the operator on the right-hand side. But this is a minor question, because most of my results concern the operator on the left-hand side. Okay? Okay. So the only reason I did it like this was that I wanted to make an impression that the APS paper also can be, the results, APS results also can be derived by a different choice of the Laplace function. If they can be derived in a different way, then it's okay. I still compare the APS results with the results which will be derived in the next transparencies from the operator on the left-hand side, and we will see the difference. Okay, so preliminary comparison between the two operators. So the operator with the which was on the right-hand side is essentially self-adjoint for cosmological constant less than zero. However, if cosmological constant is bigger than zero, then it has an equivalent self-adjoint extension. The group averaging work it gives the Ashtekar-Pawlowski sink model. So I'm not going to discuss the, I'm not going to apply the group averaging method to this operator because it was done actually in their paper, in APS paper. And the non-equivalent self-adjoint extensions give non-equivalent quantum models. Of course, a model itself is only a model, so some subtleties of maybe not physical, and those differences may be in this regime in which we don't trust this model too much. However, still we, from the formal, from mathematical point of view, we get inequivalent quantum models from different self-adjoint extensions. Okay, so this was this is what we know about the Ashtekar-Pawlowski model. Whether you want to view this model as derived by the group averaging or not, these are the results. Okay. Now let us turn to the operator in question, which I will be really considering here, which is the constraint operator given by Laplace function equal to 1. Okay. This operator is essentially self-adjoint for every value of the cosmological constant. So we have the first difference. And actually, for all other values of all other possible parameters, like parameter small k, and independently on whether we choose closed or open universe. Okay, so we can see that there is a difference, because if the second operator is always essentially self-adjoint, we won't have those ambiguities, which are in the first case. And on the other hand, we can also ask what happens to those, what is comparison between the family of physical solutions, which we derive from the second constraint, with the family of solutions which we derive from the first constraint, whether okay, so whether some solutions are lost or whether we have all the solutions given by all the self-adjoint extensions. Okay, so this is our preliminary information about those operators, and I'm going to give you the answers to those questions.
Jurek, may I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I'm confused about what you mean by using the volume as a lap. Presumably you mean the volume density, right?
Yes, it's equivalent to using volume density.
But isn't the, I mean, shouldn't the density weight of the laps be fixed by the density weight of the Hamiltonian constraint? Because the product should be density weight 1, no? Or... I'm confused.
we are allowed to to define our lab function in any way we want. So it means that lab function can be just a fixed function of time and space, but it can be also a metric, a phase space dependent function. So in this case, it is a phase space dependent. And, okay, I understand your point. Okay, so here it just means that that maybe we make some more choice. So we here we have some. Okay, well, what you are worrying about is whether this constraint is well defined, because if what we integrate is not it depends on choice of coordinates, then the result may be not well defined. Okay, so in this case, it is well defined. So let's not worry about this. And I'm not going to be using this kind of lab function in general. Anyway, the bottom line is that in this case, this constraint operator is well defined. And once again, I'm going to be talking about the choice lab function equal to 1. So in fact, I don't want to spend too much time wondering whether it makes sense to choose lab function equal to B, unless somebody else would like to make a comment.
Yes. No, it does make sense. Was that Jonathan? It does make sense in the context of the cosmological models, homogeneous models. Basically, in the homogeneous models, we can just integrate everything out in the cell and then assume that the lapse is also homogeneous, and therefore lapse is just a number after you integrate things out. I mean, you can just choose lapse to be just a number. And the statement is that number is chosen to be the volume of the elementary cell. This is something one can do in the homogeneous models because we have the extra structure, which is the cell. In the complete general theory, what one does not know how to do this thing, and that is the reason in the initial papers, one always used lapse is equal to 1 as opposed to lapse equal to volume.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Okay, thank you. And let us go to the next transparency. So we are going to answer the questions which are here. In particular, we are going to focus. I'm going to focus on this operator corresponding to the lab function equal to 1 and see what happens if we use this operator and apply the group diverging framework. So the first step is to make the spectral decomposition of this operator. Once again, the starting point is the kinematical Hilbert space. We will write this. So once again, I wrote this in formula 14, the form of this constraint operator, which will be considered in what follows. And now we are looking for the spectral decomposition of the kinematical Hilbert space. So we are looking for the spectral decomposition with respect to the eigenvalues and eigenspaces of the operator C. So the formula 15 and 16 remind the general definition of the decomposition, and the last formula on the bottom of this slide reminds the definition of the physical. Okay, and now we want to see how it works. It turns out that there is, so I'm not going to show all the details of the spectral decomposition. However, I will invoke some results about those operators, and those properties depend on the value of the cosmological constant. So let us start with the case when the cosmological constant is negative. Okay. So we are looking for the spectral decomposition of the kinematical Hilbert space. And now, the result which I'm now referring to, which comes from other works, is that with the eigenvalue of the operator P hat, any positive, or in other words, if we fix a positive number pi, and if we replace the constraint operator, which is in the line, by operator which is defined only in the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom and is given by replacing the operator with this number pi, okay, So if we do this and consider the resulting operator, then for every pi, we have an orthonormal basis of normalizable states in the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom. And this basis is this basis of eigenvectors, which, so we can see from formula 17 that the eigenvalue here, lambda n of pi, is a function of pi and is labeled by n. So, I forgot to mention, to point out what was written on my previous transparency, that here I restricted the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom to certain detail which I'm keeping here, that the Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom can be decomposed into simpler subspaces, which are separable, and subspace by subspace. So here I just fix the simplest case of the subspace. Here we have, and here and here we have all the details. One has to repeat this procedure for all the other subspaces independently. So those subspaces are independent. They are considered a super selection sector. Okay, so in this subspace, for every pi, we have a sequence of eigenvectors. They form orthonormal bases. To every n, that corresponds one eigenvalue. And now, it's very easy to write the spectral decomposition with respect to the pi operator. So this is the formula 18. But now our goal is to write the spectral decomposition with respect to the eigenvalue lambda. So it turns out it is a difference. So what happens is we have to replace in this integral the variable pi by variable lambda. We can see from formula 17 that lambda n is a function of pi. So what we do is we replace pi, for every n, we do in this integral replacement of pi by the function lambda n of pi. Okay, and this is to derive this decomposition, spectral decomposition of the operator we are interested in, of this scalar constraint operator. Okay, so we end up with the decomposition, which is defined by equation 19, by the equality 19. But to get to this line, we change the parameters of integration, and we slightly rescaled the functions which we're using. So at the beginning, the orthonormal functions were marked by tilde. And now, in equation 19, they are already untildes, so they don't have tildes. And the difference between function with tilde and without tilde is in line 20. So the functions without tilde are just rescaled functions with tilde. And the reason we rescale them is because this is what is dictated by this spectral decomposition. So now, after this rescaling, we can write the scalar product in the last line, equation 21, again in this simple form as integral with respect to d lambda and sum with respect to eigenvalues, with respect to n, which now labels different eigenvalues pi. Okay, so what we did here on this transparency is we derived the spectral decomposition of this constraint operator, and we found...
Jurek, this is Carlo, without voice, so I hope you can... this is a simple question. In equation 17, this is... you know, because you know the GR... The CGR operator, that the spectrum of the thing is discrete, right? Is that how do you know that the spectrum is discrete of this the operator with
reference to this? Okay, this is an independent result which was derived by Tomasz Pawłowski.
Okay, good.
With
good.
Some help of Kamiński, but this is some extra input which
okay, good.
Have to analyze independently.
So you know
otherwise,
somewhere else.
If you want,
then
you can. If you want to...
No, I believe you. I just wanted to know whether you had used something or I was missing some steps. Okay, that's fine. Thanks.
This is what we just know. Okay.
Thank
okay,
you.
So what we did on this transparency is we derived this spectral decomposition, and important step in this spectral decomposition is that those functions which were orthonormal in the original Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom now got rescaled in equation 20 by a factor which was coming from the spectral decomposition, from the change of integration variable. Okay, so now let us move to the next transparency. So this spectral decomposition is somehow self-contained procedure, and now we can read what are the physical solutions by just fixing lambda to be zero. But what we are interested in, we want to see what is the structure of those solutions and want to be able to compare those solutions obtained in this way with the solutions obtained by the APS model. So if we were just doing the spectral decomposition, this would be the end of the story. But now we want to compare this result with the APS. So to compare, let us go to the next transparency. And before we are able to compare this result, we have to understand what are those rescaled orthonormal functions. So we use some algebra. Equation 23 follows from some algebraic identity, which is implied by, I mean, the equation 23 is just the symmetry of the operator CGR hat. Okay, but now if we use the properties of those functions E, the fact that they are eigenfunctions of the constrained operator with P replaced by value, by number P, then from the definition of the constrained operator, we derive the equation 2425. So 2425 is a single equation. This is, so what kind of information we want to extract from this equation? So on one hand we have the scalar in 24, which is actually half of the equation. We have the scalar product between those two eigen elements of this orthonormal, between two eigenfunctions. However, here the problem is that we have two different pi. So those, we know the properties of those functions in case when pi's are the same, but here the pi's are different. And in 25, we have another scalar product of those two functions with some extra operator inside. So they are kind of, this operator is sandwiched by those functions. And from this identity, we can derive so I should explain what we are interested in. The starting point which we have is fixed value of pi and a basis of orthonormal basis of functions E tilde. But now we want to organize those functions in a different way. We want to fix a value of lambda and then admit all possible values of pi. So that's why we have to make some algebraic tricks to understand the properties of this family of functions where lambda is fixed and pi changes correspondingly. Okay, so the result which we derive is equation 27, okay, which is telling us that those new functions given by rescaling of the tilde functions are, so now we have the same lambda and two different pi's are labeled by n, and now we can see that those rescaled functions are orthonormal. However, we have to modify the scalar product. We cannot take this original scalar product, kinematical scalar product. We have to modify the scalar product by this V2 minus 1 operator inside and this P operator inside. So this is our result. Okay, so now the interpretation of this result is that the functions E without tilde, those rescaled functions, for a fixed lambda and a P labeled by N, they again form orthonormal set of vectors. However, in a new Hilbert space, which has a new scalar product defined in the bottom line. Okay, so why do we need this? Let us move to the second transparency. Okay, so we needed this to understand what are the physical solutions. So the physical, let us go, so now we go back again to the spectral decomposition. We know that the physical solutions are those distributions which correspond to a fixed value of lambda. So here for a moment we fix lambda to be lambda rather than zero to see this continuity which I mentioned at the beginning. So each Hilbert space H lambda is a space of distributions proportional to Dirac delta of lambda prime minus lambda. There is in this second equation gives us the scalar product. And now the important part is that from each solution, so this is the third equation on this transparency, from each solution, from each distribution, we construct a function of phi and v, just by multiplying this, going back to the spectral decomposition and taking the missing factors in form of this missing function e, now without tilde, and exponent of ipn lambda times p. So from a distribution, we define again a function of variables p and v. Okay. And now those functions, they have exactly, now if we take lambda to be zero, then they look exactly like the solutions are in the APS model, the solutions of the constraint equation. So here the goal was to construct from the solutions given by the spectral decomposition solutions of the APS model. And what we found was that there is one-to-one correspondence. So if we set lambda to be zero from every distributional solution derived by using the spectral method, we have a solution of the APS model. So here we have unitary map between the physical space derived by the spectral decomposition method and the physical space derived by the APS. And this map is given by this equation, by the third equation on this transparency. Whether it is easy to see it or not, it is true that this is the map which identifies our solutions obtained by spectral decomposition with the solutions of the APS model. Now, moreover, we can also consider the Dirac observables by using, so APS know how to define the operator, the relational Dirac observables. Now we want to see how we can define the relational partial observables. Okay, so there is this general framework of partial observables. So first observable is actually very trivial. This is the P operator, as in the APS model. This operator preserves the spectral decomposition, so it is well defined in every space H lambda, and is just multiplication by the eigenvalue Pn. For functions which, so now consider an operator which in the kinematical Hilbert space corresponds to some work which is defined in the space of gravitational degrees of freedom. I denoted by capital O. So consider first a classical function on the phase space. We have this nice formulae by Rovelli, Dietrich, and Tiemann how to define the corresponding Dirac observable. We need some reference time function, so we choose phi to be this time function. We need some number phi zero, and then the formula 28 and 29 define for us this relational observable, and the definition is as follows. We have to look for, let this function evolve according to the Hamiltonian flow defined by the constraint, and the time we allow it to be evolving should be chosen such that the reference function phi becomes equal phi zero. Okay, so this algorithm gives us a new function, which is now which is partial observable. This is the Dirac observable, which is defined by using a function O. So classically, it's well defined, although a bit implicit. Now we gave here formula how to quantize this function. So the key step in this formula is equation number 30. So it's the line 30 in which we write this classical observable in such a way, classically, that we know how to quantize it later. So we write it as integral with respect to parameter dt, and inside the integral there is a function on the phase space evolving in t according to the transformation generated by the scalar constraint. Okay, now I don't want you to go through the details of this formula now because it's quite late, so I should go on. But this formula is written in such a way that it is compatible with the kinematical quantization, so it's straightforward to replace the operators, this classical functions, by the operators, and at the end we can also do calculation and see what this formula is giving to us in terms of the spectral decomposition. So we apply this formula of the Dirac observable in the spectral decomposition, and we derive the result, which is equation 32. And if you study the result closer, you will see that what we obtained, again, is in the correspondence with the APS model. So we found some formula for quantizing the partial observable in terms of our spectral decomposition. We quantized it, and we found that Dirac observable corresponding to, say, volume operator or any other operator in the kinematical Hilbert space coincides with what in the APS model would be defined as their Dirac observable corresponding to this to this given function. Okay, so in summary, in this case, we don't see any difference between our spectral decomposition of our constraint operator and the APS model. There was some small technical remark that in the previous term that we are not able actually to do this quantization of this Dirac observable without splitting one into a function which is zero for negative frequencies plus function which is zero plus for positive frequencies. Otherwise, if we didn't do it, the negative and positive frequencies would give some cross terms. But since we know that they shouldn't give the cross terms, and since it is a well-defined classical function, we can introduce this function on the classical level and then quantize. Okay, so the conclusion is that when the cosmological constant is less than zero, then we did our spectral decomposition. We found the physical Hilbert space, and we defined the Dirac observables, and everything is in agreement with the APS model. Okay, so now we go to the second case when the cosmological constant is less than zero. Let us go to the next transparency. It's bigger than zero. Okay, so in the case when the cosmological constant is bigger than zero, then again we have to refer to some information about the properties of the involved operators, which we know, which we have from Pawlowski, Kaminsky, Ashtekar things. So we need to refer to the information about the eigenvectors of some operators. So now, if we fix a positive value of P, a number P, and think of this as eigenvalue of the P operator, of the momentum operator. Then for this fixed value of P, we have a basis in the kinematical Hilbert space of the gravitational degrees of freedom. However, this time this basis is normalized to delta functions. Okay, but it's still not so unusual, so we can go on. And so these are eigenvectors of this constraint operator with the P operator replaced by eigenvalue P. And eigenvalues lambda take all possible real values. And the functions E tilde are normalized to delta in lambda for two fixed phi. Okay, and we have the spectral decomposition in terms of lambda and pi. It's very simple. And in this transparency, we actually complete the spectral decomposition construction of physical states. We just write the spectral decomposition. We define the physical states to be proportional to Dirac delta at the end of the game to Dirac delta at lambda 0 equal to 0, but we can do it for arbitrary value of lambda. We have the scalar product. So this is a self-contained procedure. Okay, but now the question is, what is the comparison of this result with the APS model? Okay, so to compare the result with the APS model, we should be able to, again, construct from our physical states. So our physical states are those distributions proportional to Dirac delta. So we would need to be able to construct, as it was suggested in the bottom line, construct from those distributions, again, a function of phi and v variables, and compare it to because in this form we know the solutions of the APS model. Okay, but now it turns out that this formula, which is in quotation mark, doesn't really work and doesn't really define well a solution like this. So let us see what happens in detail. Okay, so again as before, now we would like to understand the properties of a different family of eigenfunctions. Namely, we would like to fix lambda and let P be arbitrary. And then we ask, what are the properties of this family of functions? In the previous case, this family again we were able to normalize this family in some Hilbert product. However, this time we will see it is different. So now those functions are not normalizable. So we have to play a little different algebraic. So here this algebra becomes more difficult, and it also involves analysis. And after several steps, we come to the following conclusions. So the conclusions are equations 34, 35, and 36. Namely, we come to the following conclusion. That if we take, so we have those functions E tilde labeled by lambda and pi, and we want to understand the property of this function when lambda is fixed and pi is allowed to vary. So it turns out that if we modify, again, the scalar product in the Hilbert space by inserting inside this inverse volume operator, then the tilde functions have, for the same lambda and two different pi's, have the scalar product defined by equation 34. Okay? So you can see that it's not, the right-hand side is not zero, as it was before. However, it's proportional to the sine function. Okay, and those functions, so this right-hand side can be made zero. Okay, if we go to the last line on the to equation 36, namely we can see that if we take a value of A, and then we change pi in such a way that A is changed for n times 3.14. So here we have the other pi, which has expansion 3.14. So if the difference between two i's is proportional to n times pi, then the sign on the right-hand side is of 34 is 0. Okay, so in other words, it means that now we have only, if we fix lambda and if we fix one pi, then we have series of other pi's which define vector functions orthogonal to our function. So maybe it will be clearer explained, summarized in the next transparency. So please turn to the next transparency. So what happens is we fix the value of a between 0 and pi, fix lambda to 0, and then for every fixed value a, we have sequence of functions. And those functions are normalized with respect to the scalar product. They are orthogonal with respect to the scalar product in equation CA. And moreover, they are also normalized if we suitably rescale them. Okay. So since the time is almost over, I will just describe the final results. So now we want to go back to the APS formulation and see if our how our physical solution looks from the point of view of the APS formulation. Okay, so
I'm sorry,
turns out that
which slide are you on now?
Every value of A labels a different self-adjoint extension of the constraint operator. Therefore, it labels a different model. Okay. On the other hand, our physical solution is defined for all possible values of A. Okay. So let us go to the next transparency.
I'm sorry, you're in which slide are you on?
Okay. I'm on the slide 17.
Okay.
So now I want to discuss relation and contrast.
Is lambda bigger than zero, relations and contrast with APS, and the equations are 39, 40.
Okay, so let us skip this long formula 39 and 40 and go to the consequence. So in the consequence, each physical state, which is derived by the by the special decomposition of this constraint operator, and it is just a distribution proportional to the Dirac delta in lambda, defines a family of the APS physical state labeled by real numbers A, which are bigger than 0 and less than 5. Okay, so it means that for every value of A, I can construct from my physical solution a solution from the APS model. However, my physical solution is for the value. The last. Okay, so the title is lambda, so this transparency number 18. And the title is lambda bigger than zero, the Dirac observable. Okay. So summary of the previous results is that our physical solutions compared to APS, so our physical solution is a family of APS solutions, and scalar product between psi and psi prime between two physical solutions is integral with respect to A of scalar products of corresponding APS. Okay? So now the question is, what about the Dirac observable? Now, it still could happen that Dirac observables would be just diagonal with respect to this A, and then we would say that each A labels a different sector. However, if we calculate this Dirac observable, then the result is given by the second equation on this transparency, which means it contains, so you can see that on the right-hand side, it contains cross terms for different A and A prime. So different A and A prime can contribute cross-term for Dirac observable overhead. So when we derived this result, we were surprised, and I said, okay, but if we take the function O to be identity, then we shouldn't have those cross terms. What happens? However, the answer to this is that actually the function on the classical phase space which we obtain, which we assign to identity, is not actually a function which is identically equal to 1, but because this function involves Dirac delta, and this Dirac delta produces zero, and in case when the classical trajectory doesn't achieve value tau zero. So when this reference time phi doesn't achieve value tau zero, then the formula gives us zero for this function. Otherwise, it gives us one. So even if we take function equal identically to one, then our procedure produces a function which is not any longer one, and that's why it gives a Dirac observable, which is the cross term. Okay, so this is actually it. And summary is that in case of lambda less than zero, our spectral decomposition method gave the same result as the APS results. In other words, using two different constrained operators with two different choices of the Laplace function gives the same result. However, if the cosmological constant is bigger than zero, then our results are different than APS results. So in other words, different constrained operators corresponding to different Laplace functions give different results. We introduce here a new formula for Dirac observable, which is also worth noting. And the last comment is that loop quantum cosmology is very similar to full quantum gravity if we apply Brown-Kuhar-DAS. Therefore, we expect that most of properties of loop quantum cosmology will also pass to this case. So it's also very likely that the observations which we made here can be also repeated in the case of quantum gravity with Brown-Kuhar-DAS. However, in that case, the analysis of involved operators is much more difficult, so it's not just very easy generalization. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Jorge, are you there?
Yes. So, questions?
So, let me ask a question, Jurek. So, I'm still confused what the status is of your way of looking at the quantum theory in lambda bigger than zero case. I saw that you have a Hilbert space, but do you have a complete family of Dirac observables, and is there any analysis that follows? I'm just confused about what the current status is.
So what is exactly the question?
Okay. So the question is, in lambda bigger than zero case, in this large Hilbert space, which is a direct sum of all the Hilbert spaces, or direct integral of all the Hilbert spaces, which you call APS Hilbert spaces, on that large Hilbert space, are there Dirac observables? And is there a complete family? And what is the prediction of the theory? I mean, is there anything known?
So we didn't study physical predictions of this theory. So all the Dirac observables which are well defined in the APS case are also well defined in our Hilbert space. The only question is if they are complete, in a sense, if we can use them to what's actually definition of complete set of Dirac observables?
Well, one definition would be that you look at the classical physical Hilbert space. In the classical Hilbert space, you look at the classical phase space, and the constrained surface on the classical phase space, or if you look at the reduced phase space, let's say the constrained surface on the classical phase space. And then what you want to make sure of is that if you have enough observables so that if I take their gradients, then they span the gauge invariant subspace at each point. Or if you like, that they actually, so maybe that's the best way to say it. So from this perspective, one would think that if I consider something like P5 and the density operator, or P5 and the volume at a given instant of time phi operator, those constitute a complete set. So in your case, and these are well defined on what you call the APS Hilbert spaces. So is it the case? So these operators are all well defined in your Hilbert space.
Right, so since your definition of completeness is classical, we have the same set of Dirac observables, of functions, of classical functions, which we quantize. So in this sense, this is the same set of Dirac observables. So it's complete.
Okay, so supposing you start out with a state which lies in, can I look at a state which lies in one of the subspaces labeled by A?
No, because it is not a normalized state, so it should be somehow spread. It can be focused on single A, but it cannot be just distributional state.
So that, I think, is a key difference between what you're doing and what would be done in the so-called APS way, namely that in the APS way, one who is going to look at a Hilbert space with a fixed A, value of A at a time, and one is then analyzing what happens to these observables, such as the density at a given instant of time and P5. But in your case, none of the states that APS would consider are in your physical Hilbert space because they are not normalizable in your Hilbert space.
Right.
Thank you.
So one could say I'm not in a position to somehow defend this Hilbert space. I don't want to pose this Hilbert space as candidate for true quantization. I just want to see what some procedure is giving me. So certainly I prefer the result of the APS quantization, and I think that we derive too big because of those A sectors. So I would be very happy to have some way to truncate my Hilbert space. But this is the state of the art. If I apply this so-called decomposition to this constraint operator, this is what I get. And this.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank Jurek again.